last couple of weeks, several weeks actually, we've been studying the book of Ecclesiastes. And we've talked about the fact that Solomon had been playing games with indulgent sin because he wanted to know. He wanted to know what it was like. He wanted to understand how God fit in that and how God made life better. And so the question is, why do we study that? Well, I have three good reasons, and you may have others, and you can tell me those later. But first, God actually included Solomon's writing in the Bible, so it must have value because he tells us through the scriptures that everything in there is valuable. It's also written by a human about humanity, so I'm guessing that it might resonate with you and me. How many humans are here? Oh, there's a whole bunch of you. Not sure who you are. Okay, so it probably will resonate with our lives as humans. And thirdly, through Solomon's eyes, we might be allowed to see through eyes that are like ours, see the same things. And you see, the reason for that is I'm not always convinced. I hang out with people. That's what I do. I'm not always convinced that we get what it is we're doing or supposed to be doing and why. And this morning, I was hoping to ponder with you a little bit, to ponder some of the things I've been thinking about as I've been thinking about what Solomon was thinking about, and maybe to send you away to ponder further the question, why is it I do what I do? Can you say that with me? Why is it I do what I do? That's what I want you to ponder after this sermon, because I'm pretty sure I'm not going to answer all the questions. Now, as we research Ecclesiastes, Solomon, his writing, we recognize that the scholars and writers, and I'd like to tell you this morning, I'm both. I am a scholar, not a real good one, but I am a scholar, and I'm a writer. I wrote a note to somebody this week. So, scholars and authors are in agreement, essentially, that the book of Ecclesiastes divides in those first eight chapters into four basic sections, which actually turn out to be approaches to daily life, which really don't work for the long haul. And you and I might actually call them or label them isms. For instance, materialism. The idea that stuff satisfies you and me. You know, see, what you see is what you get. What you see is all there is. He who dies with the most toys wins. You ever see that bumper sticker? I love it when I see it because, boy, is that guy going to be disappointed. Or Epicureanism, the idea that experiences satisfy. Actually, that experiences are everything, are primary for our daily lives. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Or even humanism, the idea that you and I are gods. We write our lives. We decide what is right and wrong. We're in control of it all. So be your own God, write your own story, be your own hero, as it were. Or fourthly, fatalism, the idea that we are trapped in this life. Life is on some kind of predetermined path, and there's nothing you or I can do to change that path. Eat right, exercise daily, and die anyway. Why bother? And those are the four basic isms that we find that Solomon was playing with, and you and I play with also, and all the people around us. Now, I hope you notice that these four isms, as I've been describing them, aren't actually Christian philosophy. And yet, most people, many in this room, perhaps everybody in this room, can and do play these tunes as if they were the theme song of our daily life. We sometimes live as if we are gods. We are designing life in our image. And as we surround ourselves with stuff and experiences, they reflect what we think is best. We make our daily plans, and we whine when something doesn't measure up to our satisfaction. We think it possible and probable that our efforts will truly satisfy at every level in our lives. And we work as if we'll live forever, and in the end, we still die. And Solomon, he's pre-Jesus, pre-Christianity, and he fully got this, what I'm trying to describe. And if you read through the rest of this book, you will see that he finally lands there. His journey to experience life under the sun, S-U-N, because he didn't know about the S-O-N yet, verified the futility of these sterile endeavors. And the hard work of doing daily life as a purely human initiative falls short. And maybe life actually was designed to include God. And so I take you to chapter 9 where Solomon ponders these first 8 chapters, the things that he has observed, the things that he's experienced, and he begins to reflect. Chapter 9, verse 1. I know he's reflecting because he wrote, "So I reflected." I told you I was a scholar. I read and I understood. "So I reflected on this," that is chapters 1 through 8, and that's the meat of the four isms that I just described for you. "So I reflected on all of this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. But no man knows whether love or hate waits." Now, in this verse, there is a truth that you and I just don't like. And I know you don't like it. I've talked to a lot of you. I've talked to literally thousands of people in my lifetime. And I know people don't like the truth that's in this verse. And the truth is, we don't know. Doesn't matter whether you're Christian. Doesn't matter if you're a non-Christian. Doesn't matter if you're nothing. You don't know. We don't know what life is ultimately going to offer us. We don't know, as he says here, if it's going to offer us love or hate. We don't know if it's going to offer us good or evil. We don't know. We don't know what we don't know. And so we come away from some of our moments rather frustrated. And we don't know, and this is the one that hits us most. We don't know when we will die. Or if at the end we will have had a good life, a joyful life, or just a life, or a very hard life. And we don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear that from me. And I'm sorry, I've already said it, so you've already heard it. You see, it doesn't fit our theology. And many of us have a theology that we've created out of one of our isms that we drag with us. Our theology of believe and have a good life, of pray and get what you want, or to go to church and actually know and get heaven. It's our theology. And that's how we live our daily lives. But our salvation experience can be aborted with this kind of thinking. The moment we think, heaven's mine, maybe it's not. Because that sounds like it's about me, not him. Or when we think, I've got this master. Really? What about the master having this master? Or when we begin to think, I'm safe, I can do what I want. I know Jesus. Really? Would we do whatever we want if we really knew Jesus? Or, and this one pokes at a lot of us, we fail to hear and respond to Jesus when he says, come, follow me. As a matter of fact, the Bible seems to teach that if we do this Jesus thing the way he describes it, life will be hard. We will suffer. People will hate us. Well, that was Jesus' experience. That was the disciples' experience. And what makes you or me think that we would be exempt from their experience if we live the same kind of life? I know. Why would anybody want to follow Jesus with those kind of words of encouragement? Why would anybody want to choose the way of faith with those discouraging words? But notice what Solomon said in verse 1. He said, the righteous and the wise. You want to be righteous, right? You think you're wise or want to be wise, right? Well, he says, the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hand. Now, that's the hope. That's the hope we need to cling to in this life. Whether it's good or bad or otherwise, rich or poor, in sickness or in health, whatever life offers us comes with God in the moment. And so whatever it is we're experiencing, in that moment, we can know, not wonder, we can know that God is in the moment. Nothing in our lives is such that God cannot use it for His own glory or for good. We read that in the New Testament, but Solomon didn't know that yet. But Solomon continued. He notes that we are not alone in life, and we see that starting in verse 2. All share a common destiny. The righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good man, so with the sinner. As it is with those who take oaths, so with those who are afraid to take them. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of men, moreover, are full of evil, and there's madness in their hearts while they live. And afterward, they join the dead. Now again, Solomon here is grappling with reality as he understands it. He tells us, he reminds us that we all share common experiences. Some of them are good, others are not. And we will all ultimately die. No one beats death. We're not going to get to the end of the story as the curtain is coming down and there's going to be somebody over on the side. I did it. I lived forever on my own. It won't happen. And the rest of the scriptures speak to this as well. We read in Genesis, at the very beginning, when God is speaking to the couple in the garden, by the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. Paul, centuries later, writing profound words about the life we find in Christ, and yet he says this, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man and death through sin, and in this way death came to all men because all sinned. In the book of Hebrews, and we don't really know who wrote this book, but the author wrote, just as man is destined to die once, and after that to face judgment. Dreary, depressing, dismal, disheartening. This truth can be those things. And it will be those things if we fail to own the big truth about life. You want to know the big truth about life? Lean in. Someday you're going to die. That's the big truth about life. And that's the big truth if we could just grapple with that. We would be in a better place to live a better life. And I have to tell you, as a pastor for over 30 years, I have buried a significant number of people who had claw marks all the way into the grave, trying to cling to what wasn't theirs to cling to. Because God is the author of life. Now the experts, and there are many of them, tell us that when we begin to own that we will die, that our days are numbered, that's when we begin to really live. It is this awareness that releases us to fully live the moments that we are given. Rather than fretting over or fighting against that which is inevitable, that we will die, instead we learn to live. How many here want to live their life? Boy, I hope all those hands go up. You see, we can only do that if we own who we are. I'm a human. I have an expiration date. And Solomon is beginning to grapple with that. Notice what he says next. Verse 4. Anyone who is among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, their jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. Now, I need to warn you that we have to tread carefully with these words that Solomon wrote here. I don't want to put anything into his mouth, but what he was doing here, and maybe he wasn't fully aware of it, he modeled for us an instance of what theologians call progressive revelation, the unfolding of biblical truth over time. That is, pieces of a larger truth were given to us as the story of the Bible unfolds. When I say story, I mean history. As the accounting of the history of God with man unfolds from creation to the end, there are some big things that he gave little pieces of over time. And Solomon offers one of those here because he actually spoke about the afterlife in a way that you and I should disagree with. But this unfolding, this progressive revelation, we see that when we think about our salvation. Because back in the Garden of Eden, in Genesis chapter 3, God spoke to the couple, to the woman especially, and said her seed would crush the serpent's head. Speaking of Jesus and his battle on the cross, it wasn't going to happen until way over here. And then way over here, it would become real in our lives, and way off in the future, or maybe tomorrow or this afternoon, Jesus will return and wrap it all up. But this is what he was doing. And so when he spoke of death, he spoke of it as if it was a done deal and that was it. Because he said, they are no more. They do nothing more. Their deeds vanish away. They have nothing more here. And they are also forgotten. And this, my friends, would have been the general belief of the day. Even though life after death had been spoken of back in Genesis chapter 3 and repeated through the life of the various characters of the Bible, but it was little clips of it, and as we put it all together, we realize that when we die here, a different kind of life begins. Today, with the full Old Testament and the full New Testament, we have a more fully formed theology of the afterlife. But here's where that part of me that's not the really good scholar still fuzzy. There's stuff about it I don't get. Those are questions I take to Gary and Dale. But setting all that aside for a moment, what remains for us is that the living have a hope. They're still alive. They can still do things. They are living the deeds that God has given them to do, and they get to enjoy relationships. There is hope for the living. Now, this awareness of death seems to sneak up on us or is hidden from us too often. And maybe you have noticed how shocked people are when somebody actually dies. Oh, I can't believe he died. Well, I didn't see that coming. How could that happen to her? That was just the idea that they could die. Wasn't even in their mind. And yet, go ahead, look around you. Go ahead, turn your head. I can see you not doing it. There are people around you, and they all, like you, are going to die at some point. But here's the thing. Death really doesn't sneak up on us in the big picture. I mean, there are exceptions. You know, that stroke that no one is expecting. The heart attack that no one is expecting. I was in ICU a few weeks ago with a unprovoked pulmonary embolism. They thought I was going to die right there. I didn't. So at least God must have something else to do in me and through me. But the thing is, in the grand scope of things, we shouldn't really be surprised. You see, the Bible teaches us that we will die. It is actually the doorway to eternity. You can't get to heaven without dying here unless you're still alive when Jesus returns and takes you in that form. And life models for us that people die. Okay, this will be easy for you. Put your hands in your lap. Anybody here who's never heard of somebody dying, put your hand up. And see, we all know that. And some of us more so than others, but we actually feel it in our bones. And for some of us, it feels like fear. I think I'm going to die. We get weird about it. And other people are just like, I'm falling apart. I guess I'm headed toward death. And I actually read, it was a poem, and I can't quote it because I'm horrible reading poetry. But in the poem, it describes the decay of the human and how as we get older, we lean forward and we start tipping as if we're going to fall into a hole in the ground. Isn't that what we do? It's part of our lives. But it should not be what defines our lives. And so we ask the question, what do we do about that? Well, we could live in fear that death will steal us away. We could choose the way of ignorance, being shocked and numb. Somebody else died. Or when the doctor says, you're not going to get better. Or, this is the one I prefer, we could prepare for death. And I don't mean that weird, creepy, getting up every morning, oh, still here. But we can fully prepare, adequately prepare, and even optimistically prepare for every day by doing three things. Fully live each moment. Fully live each moment. Secondly, fully embrace every experience. Own it as if it's yours. And anticipate the next adventure. Now, my wife tells me I'm always looking to get in trouble. I'm just looking for another adventure. But these are things that we can do to fully embrace our lives. That is, we can grab onto and live the motto, I'm alive, I'm alive, watch me live. Is that the kind of life you want to live? That's the kind of life that we begin to have access to when we own that someday I'm going to die, but it ain't today, and I'm going to live today fully. And that's what Solomon got to. Finally, after 8 chapters and 6 verses, verse 7, go, eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do. Always be clothed in white, and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life, and in your toilsome labor under the sun, whatever your hand finds to do it with all your might, for in the grave, where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor wisdom, nor knowledge. And I know the idea of not working might sound attractive, but the rest is not. And so, when Solomon got done with his experience, his experiment, he realized there was something better. He got it. He got life. After the experiment was over, after he was done playing with all of this indulgence, he knew that there is hope for life. There is hope for enjoying each day. There is hope for enjoying our stuff. There is hope for living a right and good and holy life. There is hope for living in relationship with other people. And all of that is good. And all of that is knowing that someday he was going to die, but not today because he was going to live today. And we have the same kind of reality if we want to own it. And Solomon offered this list for us. Enjoy your food. Enjoy your beverages. Enjoy a moral and holy life. And if you're married, enjoy your spouse. Enjoy your family, your work, your hobbies. Do these with and for the pleasure that is found in and through them. I am alive. I am alive. Watch me live. You and I, when we leave this building, ought to walk. We ought to run with that motto for our lives. It is a good motto for the life with one who follows Jesus. And then Solomon finishes this section with one more thing for us to consider. Verse 11. I have seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to all. Moreover, no man knows his hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net or birds taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. Now, I have to tell you, these are proverbial statements, and what he's saying is, essentially, usually, these kind of things happen. But because they're proverbial, they don't always happen. You don't always get snared. You don't always get trapped. You don't always have bad luck. You don't always have unfortunate times. So you and I, living with the whole scope of Scripture, Solomon living just with the dismal peace that he had planned, we know other things. Now, we might not know if we will have gain or loss. We might not know if we'll have ease or struggle. And we may get trapped like a fish or a bird. And for you and me, not always our plan at the end of every day. And some of this messes with people, but not people like you. Because you are so much wiser. You are clinging to the words of Scripture. And you heard Solomon when he said, there is one thing you need to keep in mind. And that was back in verse 1. So I reflected on all of this, that is those isms I explained, and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. Now, there is that first problem I noted about the isms. Materialism, he who dies and those toys wins. Epicureanism, eat, drink, and be merry, so tomorrow we die. Humanism, be your own God, write your own story. Or fatalism, eat right, exercise daily, and die anyway, so why bother? We toss those because we know better. But we might deny or ignore God. We do that. We might walk outside of his influence. We do that. And we might be shocked when life disappoints us. But my friends, I invite you to join me. Allow those to be the minor moments of life. Because we have hope. Because everything we do is in the hands of God, who is the author of all the good things, has the power to create good out of nothing. I like Solomon's idea that we have substantial hope because God is with us, and God is for us. Those are three powerful reasons to want to make the most of every moment.